Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here and kicking off this cybercrime session. This is joint work with my colleagues and supervisors in Delft, where I'm affiliated with in the Netherlands, and Carnegie Mellon University here in the US, Kyle Soska and Nicholas Christen. The topic of this presentation is commoditization of cybercrime. More specifically, those commoditization forms that we can observe on online anonymous markets. We have seen studies into cybercrime commoditization, specifically into, for instance, booters and stressors who allow DDoS attacks without virtually no skill whatsoever required. Those studies found that those offerings are of a highly standardized nature, where only the price is the differentiator from one offering to another. In essence, a stressor is a stressor and a booter is a booter, and it delivers you a DDoS attack. It would transform the skill of actually setting up a DDoS attack towards the skill of knowing what to buy. And as we know, the skill of knowing what to buy is specifically lower than the skill of actually setting up a real botnet. That would mean that that would lower the entry barrier for wannabe criminals to enter the criminal enterprise. And that could have a disastrous effect on the levels of cybercrime we observe. Because of the fact that you can buy cybercrime components off the shelf. And if you can do that, buy cybercrime components off the shelf, you could potentially outsource specific elements in a cybercriminal business model. The question is, do those examples of commoditization span beyond the famous examples like the DDoS attack? Can you buy everything you need off the shelf if you are a wannabe cybercriminal and you do not want to perpetrate a DDoS attack? Let's say you want to hit a bank with financial malware. Can you still do that with only off-the-shelf components? So we ask ourselves the question, which parts of cybercriminal value chains are successfully commoditized and which are not? And we ask ourselves, what kind of revenue do these online business-to-business services amongst criminals generate, and how fast are they growing? In essence, is there a place where you can buy, like IKEA, everything you need off the shelf to decorate your home? Or, when you look at the cybercriminal enterprise, can you buy everything you need in a one-stop shop to become a cybercriminal? We know one famous example of a one-stop shop if you want to buy drugs, and you want to do that anonymously, and you want to do that securely. And that is an online anonymous market, like Silk Road. Silk Road is not only famous for its offers of drugs, it is also famous for something completely different. And that is its market structure, which is unique. It offers a structured way, highly standardized product offerings, and an interface that is consumer-friendly. It also offers a lot of safeguards, safeguards for the buyer and safeguards for the vendor, making it, in economical terms, contracting with safeguards. There's a refund policy. There's an escrow system where you hopefully do not become scammed. And there's a review system to prevent both buyer and vendor scamming. It creates an interface where you hopefully can find a lot of standardized products. And that is why we see that the characteristics of cybercrime commodities are highly congruent with the characteristics of online anonymous markets. The one-shot anonymous purchases you can see there have to require suppliers to have a highly commoditized offering. A DDoS attack is a DDoS attack because it reads DDoS attack on the label. If you have only one shot, you only can click buy, then you need to make completely sure that the product you're buying is actually the product you need. Thereby, it is a highly standardized form, a commodity. So if cybercrime offerings can be commoditized, online anonymous markets should be a very highly attractive place to sell them. Why? Safeguards for both the vendor and the buyer, but also you reach a very large audience. So measuring commoditization for us is a four-stage process. First of all, we need to understand what the need for outsourcing is. We need to understand what a criminal wants and needs. For that, we turn to 8 prominent cybercriminal business models and construct the value chain components and a conceptual model to see whether or not these components are amenable for outsourcing. We need, of course, data on these online markets, so we collect and parse longitudinal data on 8 online anonymous marketplaces between 2011 and 2017. We need then to understand the supply of products. We need to classify the cybercrime-related listings to the components you might need as a criminal and track trends in listings and in transaction volumes. Last but not least, you need to understand to which extent the criminal demand is actually met by supply. To that end, we identify the best-selling clusters of listings and compare these to the offerings and of the capabilities, resources, and services needed by the criminals. So first of all, the cybercriminal business models. So like I said, the 8 most prominent cybercrime business models we used, ranging from financial fraud using malware to ransomware for extortion purposes. We reconstructed each and every time the underlying value chain and comprised of the components that is in the value chain to see whether or not you can find these components online. We made an overlay of all these value chains and that constructed into this conceptual model, which can be built upon 4 main researches. The development stage, where you, for instance, need development of malware. The distribution stage, where you need to distribute your malware, for instance, to a compromised website. Take over the infected client, for instance, using a web inject. And then, of course, cash out your crime proceeds. The black line in the picture here represents the financial malware or financial fraud value chain. With the development of malware, the distribution through a website, the takeover through a web inject, and cash out via a cash out solution. So you can make each and every one of these 8 business models using this scheme behind me. And that is why these white boxes underlying these 4 main resources are the components, the cybercrime components, you need to outsource your or parts of your cybercriminal value chain. The data we collected is partly based on the already leveraged, parsed, and analyzed data set of 2 of the authors of this paper, Nicholas Kristen and Kyle Soska, who used 7 online marketplaces in their 2015 using security paper. And we add to that data from Alphabay, 16 complete scrapes between 2014 and 2017, making this a longitudinal data set spanning between 2011 and 2017. Not to bore you with all the numbers, overall we're looking at 230,000 listings, nearly 16,000 vendors, and over 4 million feedbacks. Your typical listing looks like this. I'm sure you all are aware that Black Market Reloaded does not exist anymore, so I have to say that this AK-47 is not for sale anymore. However, if you look at this listing, there are a couple of features and elements we then extract from this page that are useful for us to analyze. First of all, of course, the title of the product, the description of the product, the price of the product, and who sells the product, so the vendor of the product, and how many feedbacks this specific product has received. Because if you want to establish how much revenue a certain product has made, you need to understand how much times it has been sold. However, online markets do not, of course, advertise with the number of sales. They do, however, advertise the number of feedbacks. And from previous research efforts, we know that using feedbacks as the lower bound level of assumed transactions is actually a good number to use, which means that we have used that here as well, which means that in this example, this weapon has been sold 3 times, as it has at least 3 feedbacks. Why? You can only leave feedback when you actually have bought a product, this specific product in this case. As, however, we are not interested in drugs or weapons or passports or tobacco, we need to do some pre-filtering in our data. For that, we turn to the prediction used by 2 of the authors of this paper previously, who have already categorized all the data into 16 categories. Well, this looks like your typical drugstore, be it, of course, that this is illegal drugs. They have classified this into these 16 categories, and as we are interested in cybercrime components, we set the pre-filter to the category of digital goods. However, from the performance of this specific classifier algorithm, we know that it has an occasional confusion with the miscellaneous category, which means that we, better safe than sorry, also included that category in our pre-filter. Going on from that, we excluded 80% of all the listings in our dataset, as 80% of this market offerings are actually concerned with not non-cybercrime listings. Then we go into our classification approach, and we needed to set out the ground truth, and then we randomly selected 1,500 items from the digital goods and miscellaneous listings, which is comprising of 44,000 listings. Upon doing that, we stumbled on the absence of three specific components that are in value chains but are not in our random sample, that is JavaScript, web injects, and customer service. We did a manual search to verify that they are absent in the entire data set. That was unfortunately a confirmation, and therefore we excluded them from further analysis. Labeling the ground truth also uncovered something else, very interesting, which we did not expect to uncover, which is so-called business-to-consumer cybercrime. So instead of a criminal selling a service to another criminal, malware development, this is a cyber criminal selling two or three compromised Netflix accounts to an end user. So we're talking about retail cybercrime, not wholesale cybercrime. However, we are also interested in figuring out this new specific type of cybercrime listing, so we added additional categories in our classifier to map these. And in total, we are predicting 10 business-to-business and 7 business-to-consumer product classes using a SVM classifier. We aim to avoid confusion between the business-to-business listings on the one hand and business-to-consumer listings on the other. However, confusion between the categories of business-to-business and business-to-consumer listings is unavoidable because we also encountered so-called package listings, wherein somebody offers two things at once, making it hard for the classifier to distinguish if it is only malware or, for instance, it is malware including a paper install service. When we look at the classifier performance, we see the overall precision reaching nearly 80%, just like the recall, and we see indeed that the confusion is there between the specific categories in business-to-business and business-to-consumer cybercrime. However, there is little confusion between the two major chunks of categories, so being it the business-to-business and the business-to-consumer cybercrime. When we then classify the listings that we have in our data set to the cybercrime components stemming from business models, one thing immediately jumps out looking at this table, which is the low number of revenue all across the board. This is not something that you would expect. What we see is that cash out solutions are still sold for $8 million, but we see, given the whole range of the data set, only very little across the board. The top half of this table shows the business-to-business categories. The middle section shows the business-to-consumer categories, like compromised accounts, fake IDs, guides, pirated software, and vouchers. And then there are some other categories, namely custom orders for one specific buyer, and other, which is drugs that still slip through the cracks of our pre-filtering. When you look at these numbers through time, we can see, for instance, that the active number of vendors on markets who are selling these business-to-business solutions is a growing business. You see here across all our markets we have in our data set that this forms a certain pattern throughout the data. We see that from Silk Road 1, it starts growing, and we see that the growth is not stopped until the end of our data set when we're only looking at AlphaBank. I want you to keep in mind this specific pattern that is shown in this graph, because all the other graphs are going to be shown the same pattern. So it's not that we have missing variables or that we have outliers. This is just a normal pattern of the markets we have in our data set. As a byproduct of this analysis, we could also see a market ecosystem that's so much resilient to takedowns or other major events. We see that the volume of transactions and the volume of active vendors is still going up to the same level it used to be after, for instance, a law enforcement takedown, which is not something we were looking for, but it's something that this graph shows. When we look at the overall picture, so listings, feedbacks, and revenue, we see growing numbers across the board there as well. We see listings growing, we see feedback growing, and we also see that the total monthly revenue is following, again, the same pattern as these markets, but is showing an upward trend. If we then break that down to, let's say, the revenue that has been generated per month per category, we see here that the cash-out category, as we have seen in the table as well, is one of the major contributors to the overall revenue in business-to-business solutions. So that is something we need to look past. And if you do that, and we look at the number of active vendors per month, per category, we see a similar but also somewhat different picture. What we see is that still, indeed, cash-out vendors, vendors who are selling cash-out products, are indeed one of the bigger chunks in this data. However, we also see from 2015 onwards the rise in numbers of vendors who are selling compromised websites, which is an interesting given because of the fact that you also need that in the distribution of your malware, not only that you need the malware itself, of course. The question of commoditization also deals, of course, with is it something you can make money in? Because we are talking about revenue, but we're also talking about revenue for the person who is selling this. And as we know that the revenue numbers are low, or at least typically low, and we see that the number of vendors is also not that much significant, the question arises if there is a group who is doing better than others. Are there criminals who actually make a living out of doing this, selling commoditized products, or are there people who are not doing that? To that extent, we plotted a CDF of the listings across vendors, and there we see that 30% of the vendors are responsible for 80% of all the business-to-business cybercrime listings. So that also means that vendors are indeed not so much specializing in one specific solution, they are also active in more than one category. If you look at the revenue, a somewhat different picture comes to mind, and that is that only 10% of the vendors are responsible for generating 80% of the total revenue. So that means that only 220 vendors are responsible for 80% of the total revenue. And only those are actually making a buck. All the others are just making a couple of hundreds of dollars a year. And that is interesting because if you follow the industry reports on the commoditization of cybercrime, it made you believe that this is actually a growing and also a very tricky process that is involving millions and millions of dollars, which is not the same what we have been finding. Furthermore, if you look at the specific markets in our data set, the question arises, do these markets indeed are a certain cybercrime IKEA? Can you buy all the things you want for your cybercrime value chain at the specific market? To that extent, we compared product portfolios across markets. So do all markets offer the same products as other markets, or are there so-called specialized markets? Well, the conclusion here is that we are not so much facing specialized markets, but we are facing broad demand and broad supply markets, because you can see that nearly all the product categories are offered on all markets. To see whether or not the supply of these markets actually meets the demand of the cyber criminals, we identified the three best-selling clusters within each category of components. Here we see only partial fulfillment of cyber criminal demand. Why? Because we see credit cards, for instance, dominating the cash-out category. So if you do not need credit cards, it's very hard to find a cash-out solution that you might need. If you are looking for an exploit, you have to settle for a macro office exploit, because that's the only thing predominantly sold in the exploit category. And if you're looking for something else than ransomware in the malware category, it's hard to find. So outsourcing is not so trivial as it may seem, given the fact that we are looking at niche supply, but a broad demand. So takeaways of this study are the following. Yes, we see evidence of commoditization of cybercrime, yet outsourcing options are restricted and transaction volumes are often modest. Similar to narcotic sales, we see a significant amount of revenue in retail cybercrime, so business to consumer, rather than business to business cybercrime. Overall, we estimate the revenue made in both business to business and business to consumer cybercrime to be 15 million US between 2011 and 2017. So yes, there is growth of cybercrime commoditization, but no, it is not so spot on as you might expect based on the previous research efforts that has been undertaken. Thank you so much.
All right, if folks with questions would line up at the mic, and I'd like to remind folks to please introduce yourself before you ask a question.
Hello, my name is Daniel Sokolov from Hazit.de. What do you think is the motivation for people who just make a few hundred dollars a year? It's a lot of risk for little revenue. Why are they there? Thanks.
That's a good question. The only thing that we have could come up with is that this is not their primary business model for their own revenue model, right? So maybe they have something lying around which doesn't work so well anymore, like a malware package that is already outdated for a couple of years. Maybe they have something related to Zeus banking malware that's already been out there for a long time but is still being sold. Maybe just it is you put it out there. If you have an auto dispatch option so that it gets automatically dispatched to the buyer, it makes you automatic money. And if it's only $100, yeah, I think that they don't care about the risk so much. That's the only explanation we could come up with.
Hi, Chris Kanish, UIC. Thanks for the talk. I'm wondering, it looked like there's a very strong 80-20 style distribution there.
Yep.
Among the revenue. Did you do any comparison to baseline of other online markets where perhaps that's just the natural way that these markets turn up, whether that's going to be different or the same as any other marketplace which exists?
No, this is on our list to do. So, thank you so much for the suggestion. But we already thought of this in the sense of we see that distribution come up, like I say, three times. So both in drugs versus non-drugs, 80-20, with the revenue side, cash out versus other categories. So we are definitely looking into the retail side and the wholesale side, if that is a normal distribution or not. But that would require also a different data set, which is, you know, hard to get by. So hope we'll get here, but we don't know. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Sarah Mickeljohn, University College London. So, I mean, I've seen certainly anecdotes where people pay for booter services just by sending bitcoins to someone's Coinbase account, which suggests that, you know, maybe these kinds of markets just aren't in these underground markets. You know, they're just sort of happening outside. So I'm wondering, I mean, it's obviously very difficult to measure, but I'm wondering if you have the same sense or if you have some estimate for, you know, what percentage of this activity sort of takes place off of these markets versus on them?
Yeah, thanks for the question. Yeah, this is also something we put in the paper as considerations for the limitations of this study. Yes, we only did look at these online anonymous markets. That is not the only place you could find commoditized offerings. However, if you're talking commodities in the economic sense, that means highly standardized. So there is, for at least to our best knowledge, forums, for instance, do not offer this very safeguarded structure that these markets do. So if you're talking about significantly lowering the knowledge threshold for entering the cyber criminal business, this would be the place where you could find those commodities. If you're looking at forums, yes, sure, you can find them there. I don't have an estimate of how much revenue there is compared to here. But those are a different kind of offering. At least it has to be a service model, because it has to be more than one interaction. And that is not sort of, if you follow strictly economically speaking, then it's not a commodity anymore. Because, yeah.
All right, I'm going to have to cut it off there, unfortunately. Let's thank Rolf one more time.